Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. I know you can't always judge a book by its cover, but sometimes you can just tell you're going to like an album just by its title. I know I felt that way when the Canadian band Stars released their 2007 album, In Our Bedroom After the War. It was such an evocative title, even though I didn't know what it meant. Same thing when the band Low released their album called Things We Lost in the Fire. And sure enough, both albums were terrific and lived up to their haunting titles. Well, now Stars has a new album. It's called No One Is Lost. I like the title. I love the album. And the band is going to play some of it for us live. Also, a brief history of tango in the work of three musicians. But first... Bob Marley is widely recognized as one of the most important artists of the 20th century, but it's become commonplace to lump reggae music and Jamaica in with vague notions of beaches and laid-back vibes. A new novel radically, even brutally, restores Marley's music and life back to the political and social turmoil from which it emerged. The book is called A Brief History of Seven Killings by the Jamaican-born author Marlon James. And Marlon joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, this book is like a symphony of all these different voices woven together telling this story from many, many different angles. It is not beach reading.
No.
And it's certainly not for the faint of heart.
A couple of things happened on the beach in the book.
Almost none of them good.
None of them good.
And I guess my first question to you is this title, A Brief History of Seven Killings. There is nothing brief about this. is there an ironic twist to that title? There are a few.
I mean, one, because it's really not brief at all. Although the killings are pretty brief. The killings themselves are pretty brief.
And way more than seven of them.
Oh, they're a lot more than seven. But a brief history of 100 killings would have sounded like Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Yes.
Or something. So there was something kind of, sort of smart alecky about it. But also, it is thought of, the killings themselves, the actual deaths of these guys are pretty brief and they are pretty sort of blips. And it's kind of what drew me to it in the first place, that this is the thing that nobody talks about. Even when you go into really exhaustive detail about Jamaica and the 70s and Marley, and even that night, it's the one thing that nobody ever talks about.
That night is the 1976 assassination attempt.
Right.
In which Bob Marley was shot in the arm.
He was shot in the arm and the chest. Had he been inhaling instead of exhaling, it would have gone through his heart. And his wife got shot in the head.
His manager
got quite a few shots in the abdomen. I think his drum, one of the musicians also got shot. Everybody survived, which is shocking.
Right. And Marley lived with the lead in his arm. Because they said, if we take it out, you may lose the arm. So he lived with it the rest of his life.
He would lose the arm, or worse, lose the ability to play guitar.
Right, right.
So, he left it in.
So that's the kind of – the book is sort of built around that.
Right.
And what we get is the long story that leads up to that.
Right.
Marley himself, he is not a character in the book.
He's
this thing that's looming over the horizon.
Yeah. And for lots of reasons, for one, by 1976, he was a character looming over the horizon. He was also, even by then, long before he died, he was already becoming a symbol. You know, a symbol of not just what you could achieve, a symbol of rising from the ghetto, a symbol of self-determination and freedom. And when that happened, it was almost so much not just trying to kill a man, but trying to kill an idea and trying to kill... a symbol.
We're speaking with Marlon James about his new book called A Brief History of Seven Killings, a fascinating new novel centered around the attempted assassination of Bob Marley. And Marlon, you've picked a couple of songs for us as almost like a kind of soundtrack to the story of the book. Is this first pick from Bob Marley and the Wailers kind of self-explanatory, given what we've been talking about?
The thing is, it was just an unwritten rule. Nobody touches the Tuff Gong.
The Tuff Gong being?
Being Bob Marley.
Bob Marley's.
The great thing about his house was that people who only a day before would have been trying to kill each other would be hanging out, breaking bread, discussing music and so on at his house. The prime minister used to drive down and chill. So the idea that the one neutral ground in all Kingston could be shot up was just so unheard of, and it was just such a turning point. And this song speaks to it pretty directly.
The song is Ambush in the Night from Bob Marley and the Wailers. So they bribe in with their guns, spare parts, and money. In the Night, written by Bob Marley after the assassination attempt in 1976. The album came out in 79. Bob Marley and the Wailers, a song picked for us by the author Marlon James. His new novel is called A Brief History of Seven Killings. So what made you want to kind of fictionalize the lives of the people who surrounded this event?
As a fiction writer, I'm always interested in the margins, and I'm always interested in the characters who will not make the history books. And this always fascinated me, largely because everybody had a version of it. I talk about this short, this article I read once that Gay Talese wrote called Frank Sinatra Has a Cold. Right. It's my favorite article ever. I think it's probably the best piece of American journalism ever. And because he couldn't get Sinatra. He tried, he couldn't get Sinatra. It suddenly hit him, what if I just talk to everybody around him? And then this whole portrait of Sinatra emerges. At one point, Sinatra actually contacted him. I go, I hear you're talking to people about me. So it's kind of if doing the same thing, doing this sort of Bob Marley has a cold.
This kind of Rashomon
approach. Yeah, and Rashomon as well, which I watched and rewatched and so on. And I was really interested in that. And also just these, some of the people in this book who are deeply affected by him never meet him. And they get embroiled in the event.
A lot of them don't like him. A lot of people resent
Bob Marley. Oh, so many people don't
Bob
like
Marley.
Him. So many people resent him on so many levels. Yeah. The thing about Marley that people sometimes forget is that never before, and I cannot think of anybody after, has such a pop music figure had so many people lined up against him. And a lot of people who hated him was the Jamaican middle class, for example. People like my father despised them because it is they had an idea of what upliftment should be. These are the first generation to go to college, the first generation. They read their Black Power Eldridge Cleaver stuff and they're educated. So and this barely educated, you know, guy who won't comb his hair
is the one who makes it. Well, language, the language in which these different people speak is also a key element of the book.
Yeah.
I mean, the Rolling Stone reporter speaks in American English.
Yeah.
The Jamaican gang members all speak in patois. And people talk about, you know, other people's speech.
Yeah.
You know, someone who's speaking above their station,
mm-hmm.
or the white guy who's pretending he speaks patois.
Yeah.
It becomes like a real kind of, not just a status thing, but
mm-hmm.
it's like, has social and political ramifications.
Yeah. It's a way in which people include and a way in which people exclude people. Because even within the Jamaicans, there are different levels of Jamaican. And every now and then, one person will remark that person chats bad.
Right.
Or sometimes if it's a character like Josie Wales, he will fake it. Because he knows that if I speak in a certain way, people think I'm just this ignorant guy who doesn't know anything. So he fakes chatting bad.
Mm-hmm.
Did want a book of people sometimes talking, whispering, screaming, shouting at each other. That cacophony kind of is the point. Any year where, you know, where Henry Kissinger and Mick Jagger were in the same place.
Yeah, and that place is Kingston, Jamaica.
Yeah.
Marlon James, the book is called A Brief History of Seven Killings. It is set in the various kind of neighborhoods of Kingston. The second song you picked for us today is Bunny Wailer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, you were talking about some people are more Jamaican than others.
Yeah.
Bunny Wailer, you know, because of the way he's lived his life mm-hmm. and avoiding the spotlight, seems to be like, I would guess a lot of Jamaicans think of him as a real Jamaican.
Yeah, and he's sometimes considered the most Jamaican-y of the Wailers, which is funny because he has the best pop instincts. Those are fighting words. But he kind of has the best. He's Wailer was the one who was most successful at listening to the street.
Mm. This is from Bunny Wailer from the early 1980s, a song called Crucial. Bunny Wailer from the early 80s, a song called Crucial, picked for us by Marlon James, author of the new novel A Brief History of Seven Killings, which spins out from the attempted assassination of reggae legend Bob Marley into a sprawling portrait of life in Kingston, Jamaica, and then eventually moves here to New York. So we have narrators who speak in Jamaican patois, in kind of regular reporterese mm-hmm. English, Brooklyn street language, and you're getting into the heads of street characters,
yeah.
you know, gang members, gang dons, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Not all of your narrators are alive.
No. Quite a few are not.
Yeah. So, you know, there is a kind of overt fantasy element to those particular moments.
Yeah, and a lot of those characters who are not alive, we don't know anything about what happened to them. We know some things, and in Jamaica, you know, there are rumors. And in Jamaica, you trust rumors more than you trust facts. Because somebody wrote those facts.
What is the, there's a Jamaican proverb
mm-hmm.
that you use at the very beginning of the book.
Right. If it not gusso, it go near so.
Right.
Like, you know? If it's not that way, it's something close.
It's something like that, yeah. So, A Brief History of Seven Killings is the name of the book, and Marlon James with us on Soundcheck and kind of giving us a little bit of a soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Tenor Saw, I don't know mm-hmm. this name. Who is this?
Tenor Saw was one of the first major post-Marley figures to emerge, but not not from the roots reggae camp. He was mm-hmm. from the street again, dancehall. So he was, again, not, and he wasn't the first, but it was a major turning point in the early 80s, especially since this song is about sound systems. It's a song about, it's a dancehall song about dancehall culture. And dancehall was a whole different thing.
Right, and dancehall would become a main part of our American pop through
people through
Rihanna and hip-hop.
But even in the early days, both dancehall and hip-hop kind of have the same genesis in a way. And we like to take credit for hip-hop because it's something that came out of nothing.
Right.
That reggae up to that point, this for all its merits, was still kind of the music of people who could afford their instruments. Dancehall artists couldn't afford that. Dancehall's instrument was flipping over the reggae B-side, which was usually the instrumental, and rapping, basically, on top of that.
So that's what we hear in this song called Ring the Alarm.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is from Tenorsaw.
Ring the alarm, hey, whoa. Ring the alarm, and not a sound is dying. Whoa, hey, ring the alarm, and not a sound is dying. Whoa, hey, some sound like a big jump on. Listen to sound, it's a champion. From the dance in any session. Rock up the woman and rock up the man. Ring the alarm, another sound is dying. Whoa, hey, ring the alarm, another sound is dying. Whoa, hey, T-Tato, we beat them all in a row. Donkey want water, but you hold him, Joe. T-Tato, we beat them all in a row. The cost want water, but hold him, Joe. Ring the alarm, another sound is dying. Whoa.
That is Tenorsaw from Jamaica, a dancehall song called Ring the Alarm from 1985. Not really a big hit here in the States, although...
It was a very influential song in the States. It's everybody from rappers hearing it to the rock band Fugazi.
Those guys always had an ear to the ground, didn't they?
Yeah, DC Punk always knew they got their reggae right.
Yeah.
And not just Bad Brains, but Fugazi and so on. So it was one of those songs that influenced a lot of people who write songs and who make songs. It was the first to talk about something that became a crucial part of dancehall culture, which is not necessarily a part of roots reggae culture, which is a sound clash. Just two sound systems basically going against each other, and whoever wins, the crowd wins.
Right.
So it was, that was, and also just, it was just such an influential song that people who never thought of reggae as an opportunity, that song was sort of a groundbreaker.
Mm. We're speaking with Marlon James, the author of the new novel, A Brief History of Seven Killings, which is set in a kind of semi-fictional version of Kingston, Jamaica, rings of narrative revolving around the big pebble drop that was the assassination attempt on Bob Marley. We do end up in New York, Bronx, Bushwick, during kind of the height of the crack epidemic, as you follow some of these characters.
Mm-hmm. Especially when crack turned out to be so easy and so lucrative, and they were looking for people who could traffic, maintain, sell, who were pretty heartless and ruthless. So if you enough time on the Jamaican streets, you become like the character Bam Bam in the book. You become sort of heartless and ruthless, and they became just perfect for moving this. Because the Jamaicans weren't approached first. The Bahamians were approached first, but they just were kind of wussy. So, and they kept smoking the stash.
Yeah.
So it landed in
the Jamaicans were ruthless enough.
The Jamaicans were ruthless enough and efficient enough and so on. So you found, so a lot of these characters who were just drifting in and out in the 70s ended up in the Bronx and Brooklyn in the 80s, and I mean, '80s Bushwick, you wouldn't want to be caught dead in.
No, or you would.
Yeah.
It's very different from the Bushwick that we have today.
Oh, my God.
To kind of represent that period, you've picked Boogie Down Productions featuring the rapper KRS-One.
KRS-One.
The song is The Bridge Is Over. What's the reference there?
Well, The Bridge Is Over was a diss record because Queens was starting to act up and act as if they played a major role in hip-hop. Sorry, Queens. but also because KRS-One always knew what was going on in Jamaica at all times. There were some really great cross-pollinations happening because of the Jamaican influence in 80s New York.
Yeah. Well, let's hear the song. It's called The Bridge Is Over from the 1987 album Criminal Minded by Boogie Down Productions.
That's it. The bridge is over, the bridge is over. Ba-da-ba-ba. The bridge is over, the bridge is over. Hey, hey, hey. The bridge is over, the bridge is over. Ba-da-ba-ba. The bridge is over, the bridge is over. You see me coming in the dance with the flipper sensei. Down with the sound called BDP. If you want to join a crew, well, you must see me. You can't sound like Shannon or the one Marley. Because Shannon, Marley, Marlon, my rhyming like the gay. Picking up the mic, man, them don't know what to say. Saying hip-hop started out in Queensbridge. Saying lines like that, man, you know them can't live. So tell them again, me come to tell them again. Gwah! Tell them again, me come to tell them again. Tell them again, me come to tell them again. Gwah! Tell them again, me come to tell them. Manhattan keeps on making it, Brooklyn keeps on taking it, Bronx keeps creating it, and Queens keeps on faking it.
That is Boogie Down Productions featuring KRS-One. The Bridge Is Over from the 1987 album Criminal Minded. So, yeah, Bronx kind of thumbing its nose at the upstarts from Queens. And picked for us by the novelist Marlon James, whose new book is called A Brief History of Seven Killings. It is neither brief nor are they the killings restricted to seven. But the book does revolve around a failed killing, that of the reggae legend Bob Marley. And you mentioned Bam Bam, who becomes, you know, kind of one of these cold-hearted guys. And really one of the tragedies of the book is watching him. You know, because early on you kind of, and this is the weird thing, you're getting, you're presenting to us some really bad guys.
Yeah.
And we're in their heads. We're seeing their point of view, and it's you almost start rooting for them, you know? And when they get kind of deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole, it becomes just, you know, you just.
Yeah, I wanted, well, I definitely wanted people to get in their minds, but also didn't want to necessarily become good guys. And I think to be realistic is to show just how horrible these backgrounds came from. I mean, one of the really violent characters is Weeper. But Weeper started out kind of as a nerd.
Right.
Who just went had this horrible experience of police brutality, not the only one in the book. And that completely changed him. It doesn't justify him, because they go on and do inexcusable things. But I really wanted people to get in their heads. And I wanted people to be, as readers, to be sort of as deeply conflicted about them.
Yeah.
Because that's you know, people are. We love people and we hate people, but it's the people we're really conflicted about that we don't forget.
Yeah. Well, there are some unforgettable characters in the book. A Brief History of Seven Killings by Marlon James, who's been kind of sharing a soundtrack of sorts. Did you listen to any of these songs while you were writing the book?
I listened to tons of them while I was writing the book, but also a lot of stuff that appear in the book that's not reggae, that a lot of the characters go through. Like one of the characters, Nina Burgess, her big epiphany comes from listening to the Velvet Underground.
Right.
You know, the song I've Found a Reason. I don't write in silence. I always write to music. Some of the stuff I was listening to while writing this wasn't even reggae at all. It was like New Order and Adam and Ann's Peel Sessions.
And Led Zeppelin gets a mention by a character at some point. All right, so The Clash certainly got mentioned. But the song we're going to end with is Damian Marley.
Yeah.
The song called Welcome to Jamrock. What's this about for you?
The thing with Welcome to Jamrock, not just because it's you bookend with a Marley, is that this is a song that sort of summed up how far we've come. And it wasn't very far. And in some ways, it's such a vital and explosive and brilliant song. But it's also a pretty depressing song. Some of the stuff that you'll hear in Ambush in the Night, especially before you get to the chorus, first chorus of Ambush in the Night, about suffering and what the desperation suffering leads to, Damian Marley is basically saying it's still there. You know, some of the troubles are new and some of the triumphs are there, but some of the old problems are just, we just give it new names.
Right.
So it's kind of a summing up how far we've come since his dad.
So it's the next generation looking at the same old problems.
Yeah, pretty much.
The song's called Welcome to Jamrock by Damian Marley from his 2005 album of the same name. Marlon James, congratulations on the book and thanks for sharing it with us.
Thanks for having me.
Come at your entrance, stone man, stop, laugh and block off traffic. Then we learn, pop off, and them start chop it. We dip it.
been filed down and it a beat rapid. Police come in a jeep and them can't stop it. Some say them a playboy rabbit. Get chopped like a bad habit. Some a bad up how stuff if you're down top it. Rastafari stands alone.
The band Stars grew out of the same music community that produced Broken Social Scene, Feist, and other great Canadian acts over the past 15 years. Up next, Stars perform songs from a new album called No One Is Lost here in the Soundcheck studio. And later, a brief history of tango. This is Soundcheck.
I'm Matt from Cabo Hill, and you're listening to Soundcheck from WNYC.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The Canadian band Stars returns with its seventh studio album next week. It's called No One Is Lost, and on it the group displays its usual masterful blend of classic pop and bouncing dance floor beats. Stars joins us in the studio today with a preview of their new record. Here they are with a version of the song From the Night. It's Stars live on Soundcheck.
She said, I don't care if we never come back from the night. I don't care if we never come back from the night, from the night. I don't care if we never come back from the night. I don't care if we never come back from the night.
Yourself and move on. 60 flights, 60 setting suns in my review, and the thousands of infinite hours since I last saw you. Let's be young, let's pretend that we never will die. Let's imagine that no one is lost. It's not easy, but we've got to try. And she said,
I don't care if we never come back from the night. From the night. No, I don't care if we never come back from the night. I don't care if we never come back from the night.
Come back from the night. from the night. There's a person who looks like you. There's a person who looks like you. There's someone waiting for you, and they're from the night. Midnight out on the floor. It's two, then three, then four. And then we're walking home. I wanna be with you, don't wanna be alone. There's a person who looks like you. There's a person who looks like you. There's someone waiting for you, and they're from the night. Midnight out on the floor. It's two, then three, then four. And then we're walking home. I wanna be with you, don't wanna be alone. Care if we never come back from the night, from the night. No, I don't care if we never come back from the night. I don't care if we never come back from the night, from the night, from the night. Yeah, I don't care if we never come back from the night.
That is the band Stars out of Canada here in our New York studio, and the song called From the Night. That is the lead-off track on the new Stars record called No One Is Lost, which is out on October 14th, and they're giving us a bit of a preview today. Torquil Campbell on vocals, Amy Milan on vocals, Patrick McGee behind our drum kit, Chris Seligman playing the keyboards, Chris McCarron playing the guitar, Evan Cranley playing the bass. Torquil, Amy, and the rest of Stars, good to have you guys here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Hi, thanks
nice
so much for having us, man.
Torquil, is that as high as you can go, vocal-wise?
Depends on what you mean by that. I can go pretty high, as a matter
you
of
went,
fact.
You went pretty high.
Yeah,
in the middle
no,
of that
I
song,
went pretty
man.
High. Yeah, last night. No, I can go quite high. I was born with the voice of an angel, and it's stayed with me, even though I now look like a decrepit turnip. My body is no longer angelic, but my voice continues
to be. I did not ask about your body. I did not ask a question about
this,
your body.
This whole interview has gone completely off the rails within 15 seconds.
Well, now, you were born in England, the land of boy sopranos
exactly.
and countertenors.
That's right, and imperialism and violence, alcohol abuse.
And rain.
And rain and yes. pop hooks. Yeah.
Okay. Well, of which there are plenty
yeah.
in this new Stars record.
Oh, thanks.
And Amy, that song, From the Night, that's the opening, the kind of epic 6-minute-long opening track.
6 minutes.
And then at the end of the album, we get the title track, mm-hmm. No One Is Lost.
That's right.
And it seems that maybe there's a kind of a connection between those two, maybe lyrically?
Well, I think actually there we kind of drop the "No One Is Lost" throughout it. It's also in "Turn It Up," which is the song that you opened with.
The single,
So it was we lived above this bar. That's where the studio was, called the Royal Phoenix. And throughout the week, it would get louder and louder with these disco gay disco. It was a gay disco bar, and we couldn't fight it, so we decided to work with it. and so that's definitely the connection. Also, okay. Between the two songs. But yeah, it's. I mean, we had a big argument about which one to start with, actually. We knew those would be the bookenders, but
right.
I just thought we would start with a positive.
So the idea is that this was conceived of as a record, as, you know, a series of songs that had some kind of thread.
Well, I think what happens with us is that as there's no conception up front necessarily, but as you start to work and themes start to emerge, you know, like with the lyrics, me and Amy, it's kind of an exchange. A song that she's written lyrics on will inspire me to write something in reply to it. And so it starts to have a sense of having a theme. But that's really, I think, more of like a conversation that ends up being had while you're making it rather than something that's planned out.
So the story with Stars is that you're all basically from Toronto, but now you're based... The
in
band
Montreal.
Is based in Montreal. Mm-hmm. Is there a Toronto-Montreal rivalry? Is there like a New York-Boston
Canadians.
Thing?
No.
Well,
no.
It's different because Montreal is essentially part of a different country in a way, right? Like
in
Quebec
sense,
is its own nation, and Canada is very much a place where people come from. You know, Chris McCarran's from Moncton, New Brunswick. If you're vaguely artistic and you want to do something in the arts, you tend to move to Toronto or Montreal because there's a marketplace there and there's work there. And but, you know, there's other places in Canada. Winnipeg is an amazing city for art. There's a lot of artists in Winnipeg. There's a lot of artists in Calgary.
Hamilton is a big, burgeoning metropolis.
I think, oddly, Canada all feels like one quite small little place despite the fact that it's massive because people do travel around so much. Nobody's really from anywhere in Canada.
Well, the band Stars is from Montreal, and they've been playing here for us in our Soundcheck studio today. The new album out on the 14th is called No One Is Lost. Torkel, Amy, to you and the rest of the band, this has been great.
Oh,
thank you so much for having us, man. You have an amazing voice.
I'll take that as
you
a compliment.
You should be a DJ, man. You should get
I
into
should
radio.
Do this for a living.
Yes.
I love always meeting DJs because I just could sit here all day
listening to you.
I should be on cue.
Anytime, you come on down.
All right, Torkel, who is on cue, you got a show, song to play us out with?
Yeah, we're going to do the title track, No One Is Lost.
Stars is the name of the band. They will be playing here in New York on November 10th, Music Hall of Williamsburg in Brooklyn, and on November 22nd, they'll be at the Majestic Theater in Detroit, so mark your calendars. They are playing for us here this afternoon. Here is Stars with the title track from their album No One Is Lost.
Are you ready to dance, everybody? Let's do this.
Everybody dies.
your hands up. Put your hands up.
Check, looking for a friend. You got a pulse, you got a problem. We know the real you, so why do you pretend? The velvet rope, the soft-eyed bouncer. The girls all shiver in their high-heeled shoes. The ones inside all feel like winners. Put your hands up if you know you're gonna lose. Put your hands up if you know you're gonna lose. Put your hands up if you know you're gonna lose. Put your hands up if you know you're gonna lose. Yes. Put your hands up if you know you're gonna lose. Put your hands up, put your hands up. Bottles empty and the beds unmade. You had the looks, you had the lover. You're being brave, but we know that you're afraid. Put your hands up if you ever feel afraid. Put your hands up if you ever feel afraid. Put your hands up, put your hands up. Put your hands up if you ever feel afraid, yeah. Put your hands up.
Band Stars performing the title track from their album No One Is Lost here in the Soundcheck studio. We've posted a longer version of this session on our website. It includes an extra song and some more conversation. All of that is at soundcheck.org. Up next, tango is more than a style of dance. It's a musical form, a global phenomenon, and some say a way of life. A look at tango next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Tango is known by many as a sultry dance form, usually practiced in films by two impossibly good-looking human beings. My guest today, though, would like you to know that tango is more than just a dance and that, yes, you too can celebrate tango. Polly Furman is an Uruguayan-born, New York-based pianist who has been promoting Latin American culture here in the city for more than 30 years. Now she's created Shall We Tango NYC, a week-long festival of tango, and she joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. Polly, welcome.
Thank you so much, John.
So when I say tango, people naturally think of scent of a woman, yeah, you know, yeah, the yeah. rose between the teeth and all that kind of stuff. What really is tango?
Tango is an embrace. Tango is an embrace, and this is how I wanted to focus and how my campaign was based on. It's the only dance that allows two people that don't know each other to lean close enough to have an excuse. And, you know, there is no need to go further than that. I mean, it's dance. But for some reason, people get hooked by the dance. And I know people that started, you know, maybe because of the embrace, but now they love it. and they go from one town to the other, to one country to the other, to one milonga to the other. And it's fantastic.
Now, what is a milonga?
When we say people go to the milonga, it's the place where people that love to dance go to. So they took the generic name of the style to call it the place where they go dancing.
So it used to be a rhythm, and now it's used as the place where
Now it's both. Yeah. Okay. Now it's both.
When we think of tango, we generally think not just of the form and the music, but also it seems to be kind of fixed in time. The middle of the 20th century, we think of that as kind of the golden age.
We think of that, but it has developed so much. Yeah. You know, there are different periods in tango. The beginning, what you're saying, the 20s, from the 20s to the 30s, is what we call the old guard, the vieja guardia. It was played by the violin, the flute, and the guitar. Mm-hmm. And it was a very happy tango. From the 30s to the 40s is the poet's time. It's when the singers, like Carlos
Gardel. This is Carlos Gardel's period, yeah.
Poetry. Okay. From the 40s to the 50s is the dance time, where the big orchestras. And, you know, it's very parallel to what happened with jazz.
With big band jazz.
Yeah, big band. Yeah. It's the same time. Okay. And both have the same beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, it started with it socially, you know, very low classes, but then it developed.
Right.
And after the 50s, there is a phenomenon that appears a composer called Astor Piazzolla, and he changed the before and after of tango.
So now, before we get to Astor, though, let's stick with somebody who actually this week we are marking his centennial.
This year is the centennial of Aníbal Troilo. He would be like the Louis Armstrong for jazz. He is like the name that you would take, like the symbol of tango. Mm-hmm. He was a bandoneonist, the bandoneon.
Now, the bandoneon is not an accordion.
No, the bandoneon is a German instrument that was used as a portable organ for religious processions in the beginning of the 20th century, at the end of the 19th century in Germany. So Aníbal Troilo, he had a big orchestra, and he was very well known because of his music, because of the poetry that was included in the music, and because he was a very generous person.
Well, and as we'll see, that generosity extended to the next generation of players,
yes,
including Astor Piazzolla. But I get ahead of myself here. Let's listen to some music from Aníbal Troilo. This is called La Trampera.
Yes.
Did he write his own music for the most part?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So this is
It's a milonga. This is a milonga.
This is in that rhythm, that old rhythm, the milonga. Aníbal Troilo, the first of our three big bandoneon players in our little survey of tango here. That is music from Aníbal Troilo, who would be 100 were he still with us. He is being celebrated this week as part of Shall We Tango NYC. And Polly Furman, the Uruguayan-born, New York-based pianist, is the mastermind behind this week-long festival of tango. And she's here with us on Soundcheck today, kind of talking about tango in general, and specifically three great bandoneon players. So the bandoneon hits the scene, what, in the 30s, maybe?
Yes, yes.
And quickly becomes the central
sound. Becomes the center.
These bandoneon players, you know, we think of them all as Argentine musicians. But the great Astor Piazzolla, we New Yorkers claim him as one of our own as well.
Well, he spent his teenager years here in the Bronx, and he got very involved with jazz. So there is that. Piazzolla is the first composer who added improvisation into tango. And tango improvisation is different from jazz. But he took the idea of improvisation because of his years here, living in New York.
And he also studied classical music in Paris. I mean, the guy, you know.
He liked Stravinsky, Bach. Yeah. I mean, he was very, very well informed. And
so he really is, I mean, especially in America, for people who know the music behind the dance, he seems to be the big name.
He is the big name, and he did a favor to many of us, because Latin American music was not really considered before Piazzolla. So he not only did a favor for Argentinians, but he did to the whole classical music from Latin America.
But to go back to something you said a few minutes ago, Piazzolla didn't just like appear out of nowhere. Anibal Troilo actually kind of gave him an early hand.
Yes. Piazzolla was in his orchestra, in Troilo's orchestra at one time. And then Piazzolla started to compose his own music. And the traditional tango lovers, they resented him a lot. And even today, they consider that Piazzolla is not tango.
Now, the piece we're going to hear is the Libertango from 1972. This is the late, great Astor Piazzolla. Piazzolla, the Libertango from 1972, and instead of the big orchestras of the tango, you know, tango orchestras in the mid-century, with Astor you get these smaller groups, an octet, a sextet,
exactly.
A quintet.
And he had, you know, joint ventures with Gary Barton and, you
the
know,
jazz
he,
vibes
yes,
player,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
Polly Furman's with me on Soundcheck. She is, her most recent project is called Shall We Tango NYC, a week-long festival celebrating the music and, of course, the dance. And it's in venues throughout New York. You can find all the details at soundcheck.org. Big event, Saturday's show, which is the Milonga, the place where people go
it's
to dance.
Show of Milonga.
And that the Milonga on that occasion will be the 92nd Street Y on Saturday. How widespread is tango today?
Completely widespread. I mean, it's all over the world.
You know, even in some place as remote as Finland, Finland has been tango crazy.
Finland is very strong.
Crazy for decades.
Japan.
Japan too, yeah.
Very much.
So why now a tango festival here in New York?
Generally, festivals, tango festivals, are all about dancing. Mm-hmm. The best tango festival in the world is in Buenos Aires, and they do music and they do dance. But generally, it's about dancing. And what I'm doing here, and I was very lucky, is to invite musicians that are young, talented, and the best from Colombia, coming especially from Argentina, from Venezuela, to show that not only they attend to dance, but they know how to play tango.
Yeah. Now, you play tango, and you play tango with Daniel Binelli.
Yes.
So
yeah.
We heard how Anibal Troilo sort of made way for Astor Piazzolla. Astor Piazzolla played early on with Daniel Binelli.
Because Piazzolla changed his quintet to a sextet, and he invited Daniel Binelli. Actually, when Daniel won, when he was 13, he won a competition called A Star Is Born. Piazzolla was watching on the television, and he calls, says, one day you're going to be playing with me.
Mm.
And this happened many
years
later. And then the 80 last concerts of Piazzolla's life, performing live, Daniel was next to him.
Yeah.
And so he would be like the, it's like in the Olympics, you pass the torch.
Yeah. And who is, so there's a new generation that Daniel Benelli is passing the torch to.
He's passing the torch, and he's passing the torch in this festival also.
The festival is called Shall We Tango NYC. Various events, various venues throughout New York this week, and details are on our website at soundcheck.org. Let's hear Daniel Benelli. This is with you, Polly, at the piano, and the Isaac Trio with a piece called Buenos Aires Oracero. And Polly Furman, thank you so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you for having me here. Thank you so much.
That is the Furman Benelli Isaac Trio performing a piece called Buenos Aires Oracero. Tomorrow, linguist David J. Peterson uses the term conlangs to refer to invented languages like Esperanto or Klingon. He'll tell us about developing a conlang based on Dothraki, the fictional language spoken in the Game of Thrones novels, written by George R.R. Martin. We'll also have live music from the very talented guitarist Blake Mills, plus we dare to explore the history of Freebird, the Lynyrd Skynyrd song. All of that tomorrow. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.